With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Rap. It's Neil Atkinson with Ben Johnson, Gareth Roberts and Amelia Bonner. For those of you who aren't watching on YouTube, Amelia Bonner is very, very close to a radiator. Encouraging all sorts of imagery. Yeah, it's our video show.
You have to tell someone if it's a video show.
I did. I put it on the email.
Oh, I didn't read it. Sorry.
I mean, it already puts everyone one step behind, doesn't it? It is indeed a video show. So you can get this on YouTube if you want to see Amelia Bonner doing a best Teddy Waite and Brian Keenan impression. It is happening right now for you. But before then, we've got to talk about the Reds. We've got to talk about their trip to Leicester, which finished Leicester City 3, Liverpool 1. We've got to work our way through it, and I think the start of working the way through it, though, you know, we're going to be all very, very honest and open during this, Gareth, is just how much this hurts at the minute, to be honest with you. The 10 minutes from 75 to 85, probably amongst the most frustrating I can ever remember watching Liverpool. You know, it's in the top five of making you go absolutely bananas, and it's just horrendous at the moment, really. And if people are struggling, I can completely understand why.
Yeah, I'm among the struggling crew, to be honest. For the first time ever, like, you know, given what we do and all that, I deleted all my social media yesterday. I haven't looked at a paper. I haven't watched Match of the Day. None of that. I can't be asked. Like, it's the only thing I've watched that relating to the match, other than the match, was Jürgen's press conference, and I have to say that did not help. The manager looked broken in that. Looked like he was on the edge of tears. And you know, he gets asked the question, like, "Are you conceding the title?" And he sort of says somehow yes, and looks like he's going when he's saying it, like. And obviously, he's been through a tough time personally, but that aside, what we're all going through around Liverpool, and it must apply to the players as well, it's just unbelievable. It just genuinely feels like everything's fucking against us. You know, everything's going wrong. The injuries is never ending. The rumours about another injury are always right. The press conference is always a negative press conference because it's about injuries. The game always involves another injury. Do you know what I mean? It's just unbelievable. I've never known anything like this, and I don't know a Red who has known anything like it. You know, you'd always had like a reference point of, oh yeah, it's like Souness, or oh yeah, it's like Hodgson, but look, I know where we are in the league, and I know the context of what we've won and what this side has done and what the manager's done. All those usual touch points for when you're feeling a bit shit about it, but it's unbelievable the shit that, and like the VAR, like I don't know my arse with VAR because it bores the absolute arse off me, but I don't understand the big decision yesterday. Like I can see a Leicester limb ahead of Firmino's foot, and doesn't that count? No.
We'll do that at length. The one thing I want to say, Gareth, in terms of what you've just said and the reference points of thing, I think is really interesting, because what I'm finding difficult is I've seen Liverpool sides that have to scrap it out for fourth. We've seen fucking loads of them, if we're all honest.
Yeah.
But one of the things about those sides is they're often not very good. One of the things I found really tough to take yesterday was they were good for 75.
Yeah.
They weren't perfect, don't get me wrong. Vardy could have scored a couple of opportunities, but they were pretty good. And that's what one of the reasons why that 10 was as heartbreaking as it was that for 75, Liverpool, they're the better side. They deserve to be ahead. They scored a frankly beautiful goal, an absolutely drop-dead gorgeous goal that we'll all now forget. You know, it's now scrubbed from all of our memories because it's associated with what comes next. And I think that's one of the bits that is hard to take, is that you get to see them put certain performances in at times. The great second half against Everton, and for the first 10 minutes against Everton, for instance, and then they get diddled by the VAR there. And that's what's killing me. I'm all right with watching a side that just trundles to fourth because they're fundamentally a bit shit. When I'm watching lads put the fucking heart and soul into it, give it everything they've got, when you're playing your fifth and sixth choice centre-halves, that's where it kills you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in these situations, it's sort of the done thing, you know, in football journalism to have an inquest. It's just the way it is. It would apply to any club. It's what, you know, all the big guns in journalism wheel out their obituary piece and then say what's gone wrong and decide who to slaughter. And we've had that all week. And I've sort of not been on board with it because, as you've just said, I've not seen a lack of effort from these boys. I've not seen, you know, like that they're not putting it in. You know, I've seen some daft shit, even doing what I said I did and deleting absolutely everything. I saw comments before I went and I was just like, what? You know what I mean? Like people talking about Klopp out and people talking about get the owners out and all this. And I'm like, it doesn't need that. It just needs something to fucking turn here because they are putting it in. You know, I'm watching it yesterday and I'm obviously, like, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking about what I'm doing for the post-match pint afterwards. And in my head, the conversation is going to be, they're good today, weren't they? You know, they grafted, they put it in, the press was good, they didn't let Leicester play, they created opportunities, okay, Vardy hits the bar, but, you know, we have the one where Mo maybe can pull that out the sky and score before he miscontrols it. You know, there's a penalty shout in there as well. The goal, as you say, is absolutely tremendous. It's world class from Bobby. It's a great instinctive finish from Mo. It looked like it was done and dusted there on in, and that we'd done it. And then another mistake that you cannot calculate for, that you cannot prepare for, that you can't do a training session for, that is fuck all to do with the manager. It's just one of them. And no one wants to hear that it's one of them, because it's like, no, someone must be for blame. Someone must be in the gallows. Someone must have a noose round the neck. No one's to blame when the keeper and the brand new centre-half run into each other and you give a lad who never misses a chance to score a goal. You know what I mean? And then from there on in, you know, their heads have gone. But anyone's fucking head would go in that situation, surely. It's like, you know, like, the only thing I was puzzled by was why they didn't all look at the sky and go, oh, for fuck's sake, anything else? Do you know what I mean?
On it, Amelia, if there's to discuss the 75 and discuss what's working within the 75, but also what they could do a little bit better within the 75, and then we'll come to the 10 and we'll break it down and then we'll go into about heads going. To go into the 75, it is a great goal. It's a shame it almost needs a great goal. Like, the great goal should be the goal that makes it 2-0 or 3-0 by that point, because Liverpool have been, I think, by that margin, the better side. And that's, you know, if you want to maybe look at where they could improve in a general footballing sense at the minute, it's getting that cushion, it's scoring when you're on top, and they're bang on top for the first half an hour of the match and they get nothing for it, and maybe that's something they need to think about.
Yeah, you're right, and Robbo was right in the sense that it's the what makes it much harder is how good you are for the first 75 and that you can deal with. I mean, you can't deal with it, and I think it's easy to say, oh, it would be easier if they were just shit, because it wouldn't be, and we'd all be much more deflated, I think, but seeing them play brilliantly despite all of the things that have gone wrong for them up until that point, just up until the first whistle, and yet, and they're brilliant for that first 75, makes it much harder that the result is the way it is. And I think you're right that when that first goal goes in, it's incredible and brilliant, and I don't think we should forget it, given how shit everything is after that. We shouldn't scrub it from our memories and just go, well, we won't talk about that again, because it is absolutely incredible and world class. But I think the difficult thing is when they score, when that first goal goes in, I turned to Steve and said, the disappointing thing is here, they've been absolutely brilliant, but this isn't going to be enough. And you almost know, because of the way things have gone, and it has been the case in quite a few games now, that we're brilliant for 75, we're brilliant for 70, whatever. And then we just can't. You need there to be a second goal almost straight after. We need to do what Leicester did, where you score when you go right again, 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 until you eliminate any sense of hope or any sense of a resurgence from them. And we just don't quite do it. We don't bolster ourselves with a second goal. We don't make it secure. And you almost know there's that incredible first goal and you go, 20 minutes is a really long time now for them to hold on to this, and it will be a case of holding on rather than building on it. And I don't know why you get that feeling, but you just do straight away, even after a goal that brilliant. You just know it's not going to quite be enough, and it'll be another game where Liverpool were brilliant for the majority of the game, with the better side, deserved to win and deserved to have several goals before the only goal that we do get, but it's just not enough.
in amongst all of this, Ben, I think there's a little thing that we all do in our own heads with Leicester. And I don't think Liverpool Football Club do it institutionally, but I think still up and down the country, we forget that Leicester are the third best team currently. The table says that. They might be the fourth best with Chelsea. There's a conversation around us. They get a 2-2 draw with United recently. You know, you forget that Leicester are that good. And we pull them to bits, first 30, to the point that their gaffer's got to change the shape. I think this is one of the things that gets forgotten and has been sort of forgotten when people have been praising Leicester for the performance afterwards, is their manager, he sets them up one way, he has to change it after 25 because we keep getting in. And for me, it is that sort of, when we are getting in there, you know, there's the one that Salah puts across for Mane, and Mane, Amarte just gets in front of him, he doesn't quite get there in time. There's another couple in there as well. Liverpool have loads and they have chances, really good chances, and then they also have chances to create better chances. And you are just left a little bit feeling like, lads, this is where, when you are that on top in a game of this magnitude, you've got to at least get one to then be able to get the bridgehead, to get the foothold, to then turn that one into two at some point later in the match.
Yeah, I think the issue, one of the main issues this Liverpool team is struggling with at the minute is it's a lack of ruthlessness, not just at the back, because that's obvious. Because that you're bound to have no ruthlessness there, because you've got none of your first team players available apart from the keeper. But going forward, what the reason this Liverpool team is so good is that for the last 3 years they've figured out how to be utterly ruthless at both ends of the pitch. And you know, we spoke about it years ago, Neil, that, you know, I remember doing review after review where Sean was saying the reason United was so good under Ferguson is that they realised they needed to be ruthless in both boxes. And everything else didn't really matter. And we figured out how to do that. And I think what's happened this season, the implications of all them injuries, it's killed us at the back. But it's also, it means that, it almost means that, I know you said we weren't perfect for the first 75 minutes, but we almost were.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We almost were absolutely perfect. You know, they get in once for the slip. Okay. And they hit the bar. And maybe it's offside, and they get in one more now, so it makes a great save. But aside from that, Liverpool's shape is practically perfect. It completely nullifies Leicester throughout the match. They cannot play footy. The commentators, you know, over and over are saying Leicester need to start playing footy. And the problem with the commentating is they don't say why they can't play footy. Do you know, they're just not playing very well. Or maybe someone's forcing them to not fucking play footy. Maybe they never thought of that. Liverpool's shape was perfect, practically. But I think the problem we've got now is that everything's got to be perfect in order for Liverpool pretty much to win a game at the minute, the way it's going, because you've got so many injuries, you've got so many things going against you. Like in an attacking sense, it almost feels like Liverpool know they're vulnerable if they lose the ball, and they know they're vulnerable if they get turned round and there's a ball over the top, so everything's got to be perfect in that press. So there's just slightly second guessing what they should do, but they're also not getting much of a break of the ball. But it does feel a lot like, well, Liverpool, yes, they look perfect, but they look like a team who had a weak underbelly and it just got exposed.
There's the Vardy header in the first half, and I think it's almost more instructive than the one where there's the slip, as you say, and he gets through. The Vardy header's instructive in that that's one of the very few moments where you get to see that Henderson's a midfielder playing centre-half. His positioning's just not where it should be. Apart from that, Ben, and especially as the second half wears on up until 75, what Henderson's doing is, it's nigh on spectacular, frankly, in that he's playing almost at times centre-half and six. And he's almost creating the space for other people to go and play. He's surging into midfield when he can. His use of the ball, the number of times we get in or nearly get in off one of his passes. You know, I'm watching this at the minute and everyone feels for the gaffer. And there's loads of reasons why. Not least the fact that he's absolutely phenomenal. And secondly, that he's undergone a deeply personal tragedy in what are horrendous circumstances. But I'm also feeling for the captain, who I think, you know, is the Liverpool player across the last sort of 6, 7, 8 games, who has been repeatedly outstanding. And I've thought the same again yesterday. I thought he was absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, he was. And I think, you know, imagine the frustration we've got and the manager's got. You've hit the nail on the head. He must have that same frustration, because I think one of the main issues that we've had against City, one of the main issues we had was a lack of mobility in the midfield. And you can see, if you watch Henderson over the last three or four games, every time you cut to him, he's screaming at Thiago, screaming at him. Not for any other reason than he knows where he would be if he was playing in that position. And he's like, lads, you've got to get across. And I think he's almost trying to win us the game by sacrificing himself. And yet Liverpool are nearly perfect for 75 minutes and still don't win the game. And I think there comes a point whereby you've got to look at the impact that moving Henderson out of midfield is having on the rest of the team. It's weakening us in two positions. We were a side built over 3 years to eradicate weakness. You know, if you think back to the progression of this team, we got Sadio Mane and we had Coutinho, and we struggled slightly against the low block. Remember getting beat by Burnley 2-0 away, Coutinho had about 50 shots.
It was horrendous, yeah.
It was horrific. And so, year on year, we improved. We got Salah in, we went mad in attack, but we still had a weak underbelly at the back, and we would occasionally just go berserk in matches. Porto away. Was it Porto? We 3-0 up, and I think it went to 3-3.
No, Roma. You think of Roma?
I can't remember who it was, but there's a few where we're cruising in. Seville, it might have been.
Oh, Seville, yeah. Seville, spot on.
We're cruising in games, and then we've got a weak underbelly. We've got a keeper who can't pull you out the shit, and we've got defenders who now and again knock off. And when that happens, our mentality goes. So we bring in Virgil, and we become a team that's less. It's less mad. It's more controlled. The team that wins the league is a more controlled football side. You know, it's got the ability to play every way you want. It can hang in games. It can win games by sitting back. It can win games by controlling space. It can run you off the pitch. It can break you down however it wants. And what you're looking at now is a team that's lost the ability to win games in quite a few of them ways without being perfect. And it's dead hard to be perfect. Do you know what I mean? So we can't hang in a game. We can't win the ball early.
And do you think we can't, just to come back, do you think we can't be mad?
I think we've almost lost the, because of the progression of the side.
We almost can't press a big chaos button.
We almost can't reset it and go, right, remember what you used to do in 2017-18 when we used to just leg it everywhere and batter teams? I think there's a couple of reasons why we can't do that. One, everyone's fucked. Two, they're playing every 3 days. They don't get a rest. I mean, I think it's interesting yesterday that Liverpool are the much better side for 75 minutes because they had a week off. You know, that's the other thing. We have a week off. Leicester play midweek and they rest the players, yeah, but they still had that process of, you know, setting and going a game and blah, 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 and all that, warming up, warming down. Liverpool had a week and that's the best we've played in ages. But we still got that soft underbelly. And I think it's just what Robbo was saying before, the stuff that's going against you. I think it's you can't, you wouldn't be human if you weren't in that team when stuff starts going against you thinking, fucking hell, what next? Do you know what I mean? Klopp's interview after it where he says, look, the first goal, I think it was offside, but it's one of them. Okay, the second goal happens because of these circumstances. I weren't happy with the third goal because there's still bags of time and we go to shit. And I think that's the only thing he's pissed off about, apart from the fact that it feels like someone's just taking the piss out of us.
They, Amelia, through the game, I think what's really interesting is how much Leicester can't cope with Salah and Mane. And I think you see it in all phases of the match, that they can't live with them. And I think that if there's a big positive to take from the match in general, it's that talking about them being chaotic. Firmino's moments of genius for the goal. Firmino in general doesn't play all that well. Doesn't feel anywhere near as dangerous as he shows himself, but that's all right because he does that. But Sadio and Mo, all the way through the match to me, feel like they're about to make something happen.
Yeah, and when Ben talks about that kind of the ruthlessness and the relentlessness that it feels like we're kind of lacking sometimes, the one place that we're not lacking it is in the front three, because they are still relentless and they are still ruthless and they're still a threat at all times to whatever opposition side you're playing against. And I think the way that we feel when you see Jamie Vardy in a position where you go, well, he's never going to not score in that position, is absolutely how you still feel about Sadio, about Bobby and about Salah. And I think that the only difficulty that they have is that kind of all of the other issues that we've got that are no one's fault and that are down to just a series of kind of biblical fuck-ups are the things that kind of feed. So in defence, in the midfield, all of those things where people are having to do things that aren't their natural role, they're having to play with people that they're not used to necessarily, it takes a lot more effort to get to the point where Bobby, Mo, and where they get to be, where Mane gets to be relentless, where Mane gets to be ruthless. It takes a lot more to get to the point where they're able to do that. Everyone's got to be perfect for them to then have the opportunities to do that. And when they get the chance to, they are. And as you say, there's probably three or four almosts that could have happened there in the first half alone. And the one that we do get is absolutely spectacular. But it's not enough.
The one in that first half, Amelia, what you're able to see is, for instance, I think over the course of the half, Mane's running at Albright and he's running at Amarte. He's running away from both of them almost at will. That's one of the reasons why they changed the shape and offered a bit more support around there. You get to see Salah, for instance, give Ricardo Pereira, who I think does all right because he's dealing with Mo Salah. And I think that's the point, really, is that Leicester don't necessarily defend brilliantly, but they defend just about well enough coming up against brilliant footballers. And I think that that's one of the reasons why Rodgers post-match, I think, feels pretty buoyed by what he's seen, in that they aren't living with Liverpool, but they are hanging in there in a way in which Liverpool don't hang in there after 75. They just hang in there, Leicester.
I think there's points where they are, if we're being absolutely fair, they're more than just hanging in there. Like, Ricardo does some absolutely incredible defending at points to things that you just think, well, there's no other way this is going, and you think that we're going to score. And I think that he does actually do some bits where you have to give credit for it being some absolutely incredible defending. But yeah, I think you're right that the front three are still one of the only bits where it still feels like the Liverpool that we're used to having watched over the last 3 years of going, they just can't cope with this, and there becomes an inevitability that Liverpool will get a goal. It's just that they should have, that inevitability should have added up to a few goals in the first half.
The legs factor, Gareth, we've got the week. One of the things that sort of struck me, again, as we're getting closer to 75, it's actually on 75, he does Jones for Oxlade-Chamberlain. And I think Jones plays well, but I think the 10 minutes before he comes off, you're seeing him just begin to wane a little bit, and it's a reminder that he's probably played more football than we would have expected. And he's certainly playing more football at a higher intensity than he's ever done before in his life. And I think he is just waning. But then the flip side of that issue is you're bringing on Oxlade-Chamberlain, who still understandably just looks nowhere near fucking match fit. And when you go through them, this is, you know, this becomes one of the problems. Could one or the other of the fullbacks do with a bit of a rest? Yeah, but who on earth do you throw in for them at this stage of proceedings? And it's why the injuries, I find the injury chat to be so sort of limiting, is that it just sort of becomes, oh, well, it's Van Dijk and Gomez and it's a couple of other. It's like the ramifications of this, you see it almost every time Liverpool play a footy match. It's not just one thing or even two things. It's like this, it's like the whole thing's been like not throwing one big rock into a pond, but throwing six big rocks into the pond, and you're still seeing fucking ripples.
Yeah, the roll-on effect of it is there all the time, and it's almost like everyone is bored when they do the analysis of talking about the injury, so they look for something else. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was just looking at some of the headlines now, because as I say, until this point, I haven't looked, and you know, apparently Shearer has done a piece about what happened to Liverpool's pressing game. Well, it was there, mate, in the first half when Leicester couldn't kick the footy. What are you on about? And it's almost like, you know, like I say, all those think pieces and stuff. It's the injuries, lads. That's it. It's the injuries. And like, you know, you bring on Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's made, it's his eighth appearance of the season. And not surprisingly, he looks undercooked. Equally, Thiago's not on the pitch because he's goosed, but Milner has to go off injured, and he has to come on. And then people are saying, oh, Thiago looked laggy. Well, yeah, the manager knew that, mate, but he didn't have any other choice. Do you know what I mean? And it's like this sort of search for why the manager's a dickhead, or why the manager's daft, or why Liverpool have done something wrong. It's the fucking injuries. And like, you can't talk about it enough, because that is the reason. Like, 17 centre-back pairings across a season when you played 24 games is fucking bananas. Like, who's ever dealt with that? Someone can dig into history books and tell me, surely, who's ever had to field 17 different centre-half partnerships in 24 league games? Because how many times have we talked on the Anfield app about, and not just us, when we've had guests on as well, when we've had Carragher on, whatever you want, how many times have we talked about partnerships on the field and how important it is to know what they're doing? And We haven't had that all season, pretty much.
They'll get to 20. Now that you've said that, they'll get to 20. By 38, they will get to 20. Because Fabinho will play with Kabak. Presumably at some point Fabinho might play with Davis, and at some point Kabak and Davis might play with each other, and Nat Phillips is still in the Meg specs, and I haven't mentioned Henderson there. They'll get the other side of fucking 20.
It's absolutely crazy to be expecting fucking anything from them, really, in the circumstances. Like I said the other week, and I know people didn't like it, but fuck people. They've done well to stay where they are, to be honest with you. Because it's absolutely mad. It's like turning up for work and knowing what you get with someone else, and then just turning up one day and they're not there. And so you haven't got the crack with them, for one. You don't know how they take the brew. And some weirdos there who you've never worked with in your life, and you're expected to know what they're going to do. And you, of course you don't, and the only way you find out is through experience. And look, we've seen it, and Klopp referenced it. Like, we know, through watching Liverpool all the time, we have that. Alisson loves to come out, loves to come off his line, loves to sweep up. Kabak doesn't, because he probably hasn't been watching Liverpool every week, and he's trained with them a few times, but probably no one's explicitly said to him, Alisson loves to come for them, you know.
He's not played with that keeper, Robbo, but he's probably never played with a keeper like that keeper. So, for instance, if it's Si the Mig, who is much more like most goalkeepers than Alisson Becker, he's got no fucking interest in that ball. And so it never happens. That doesn't mean that side that makes better or worse, but it's like, if you're Kabak, most goalkeepers you've played with in your life are much more like Mignolet than they are like Becker. And so it isn't just the idea that he hasn't played with this keeper. He's not played with a keeper who's like this keeper, because there's only about three keepers on the planet who are like this keeper.
Yeah, exactly. And look, in terms of like criticism of the club or the manager and things like that, I'm all for it when it's fair, if you know what I mean. And look, some of it might be fair, but I just think you've got to constantly reference the circumstances, because it's unbelievable. And in terms of like turning on, you know, the running of the club and stuff like that, what is it you wanted? Like, is there meant to have been a planning meeting? Is there a planning meeting at any club at the start of a season, or in pre-season, or in the summer, whatever you want to call it, where they say to each other, okay, what do we do if three centre-halves are out for the season? Like, that doesn't happen, does it? That isn't a plan. So if you brought that up in a meeting, you know, Edwards would be going, but the, shut up, you dickhead.
The flip side of that, though, Gareth, to you know, to push that back, is that it was clear that that was a problem end of November. So then it becomes, what are you doing 1st of January? And that's where, that's, for the me, there thing, is legitimate criticism. What are you doing 1st of January?
I get that. But then also, like, What happened in January, or what happened in December? Like, who did they inquire for, and what were they quoted in terms of fees? Who did they try and get? Because we know they tried to get loads of different players. I forgot the names already. There were that many.
They tried to get Kabak. They asked for, they apparently spoke about Kabak early December and got quoted 30 odd million.
There you go.
Payments up front. And yeah, they were like, all right,
yeah, that's what I mean. So it's almost like, let's not recognise that we might have had clubs trying to rip us off and just go, everyone's shit. But what were we quoted? How much money? And the deals we did get in the end, are they not good deals? Is it not a good deal for Kabak? Like, oh, get it done 1st of January is like the most hyped sentence on Twitter in Liverpool world. But he is thinking, lads, about what it might have been like to try and get a centre-half when the world knew you were missing centre-halves. Like, what we might have been quoted and all that. And I just think that, you know, it's too easy to throw the circumstances out the window and start volleying people. And it's a bit grim. And that's one of my big reasons for not reading it all at the moment.
I think the idea of, and I think that this is, for me, Ben, this is a massive test for everyone, for the people outside the club, but also for people inside the club and for the general sort of perception. There is, for me, an aspect of this which is stay the course. Is there the idea that some stuff needs to change, that everyone's got to assess processes, all that sort of stuff? The answer to that's yes. But the answer to that's yes in a season where you get 98 points, 99 points and win the league. The answer to that's yes when things go perfectly, do you reassess? It's what I think's really hard, though, at the minute for everyone, both people outside the club, us, the general support, support everywhere, inside the club, is that feeling of, you know, staying the course. It isn't the easiest thing to do in a really weird way. It's actually the hardest thing to do. With all the extra sort of circumstances, it's hard to actually stay the course, I think, because the one thing you'd love to do is just fucking burn everything to the ground.
Yeah, it's easy to rip up and start again. Something's going wrong. It's the easy. That's the easy way out. Oh, yeah, we made a load of these errors. But I think what the club will be asking themselves is, did we have a strategy for the year? Did we have a strategy for a mad year of footy? A pandemic year where we're going to play every 3 days? And I think the answer that they'd come back was, yeah. We looked at our squad. We were relatively comfortable with our centre-half options. We thought, because of the way the year's going to go, we might need to play a little bit more of a controlled approach because we don't want to have to run everyone ragged. So what we could do with a really good playmaker who plays centre mid, let's buy the best one there is in the world. Sound. Let's put him in. And within a week, he was out for 3 months. Our centre-half was out for a year, our best centre-half, the best centre-half in the world. Within a couple of weeks later, we lost another centre-half for the rest of the season.
Who at that point was as big a blow as the best centre-half in the world going out, because the best centre-half in the world's gone out.
And so the context of, as Robbo says and as you said, it's not just individual injuries, it's the whole plan. I think they had a plan to play a much more controlled type of football, because I think the rationale was, look, we can control games because we've got the best keeper in the world, the best defender in the world. We've got a midfield that can fucking battle and win the ball back whenever we want. We know against, when we need to play against the good side, we know we can fucking play that rush footy that no one can live with this physicality that we've got. We know we can play games by sitting in and winning. We know we can hang on and win 1-0 because we've done it for the last 3 years. That's our plan for this season. Let's see how we get on. We bought a left back because we thought fucking Robbo hasn't missed a game for 2 years. He's going to need a breather. We took some chances. We took a gamble with not getting an extra centre-half. Yeah, but I think if you asked them the question, were you fully prepared for this season, they would say, as far as possible, we put a plan together, we were going to make it work, and then we got fucking battered by a load of mad stuff that we had no real control over. And so since then, we've been chasing our tails. And the stuff we're talking about, the attack, as potent as they were, well, not. But they still look as dangerous as they were when we get them in the right positions. But the problem, the whole thing's systemic for me. You know, we look at why we're not, why aren't we converting chances when we're completely pressing teams in, like we did yesterday for the first 75 minutes. Why aren't we building this into 2-3
leads? There was a really interesting little period in the second half where I think it was from a set piece and the ball broke. And you've got to be careful here because, you know, it's not like he's played at centre mid at times this season, and it's not like you've got to act like he's like, you know, like every great centre mid rolled into one and multiplied by 10, because he isn't. He's got his flaws. But there was this really interesting period, I thought, Ben, where the ball broke from a set piece for us and Henderson just stayed in midfield. And it was like there was this rolling period of momentum that was pressing Leicester back and really pressuring them, because he just knew, because he's used to it, for one thing, he's done it so regularly, where he was going to pick the ball up next and then what he was going to do with it and the diagonal run he was going to make in and out of possession. And it was just sort of striking to me that at the minute, in a really weird way, you'd often take as a team your line from where your defensive line is. And I think that that's a massive problem for us. But I think it's compounded by the fact that I think we'd all be 5 to 10 yards further forward if Henderson was able to play 8 in midfield.
Exactly, and it's all of them little things. If you've got a midfield of Wijnaldum, Fabinho and Henderson, you're not getting out. I don't care who you are, your outball then is a boom over the top, and take your chances with one of them. You know, you might get him once in a game. Liverpool are missing that ability to pen teams in. They were practically perfect for 75 minutes yesterday, but the midfield three was Milner, who went off injured, Jones, who at the start of the season no one had had him playing more than 15 games, and whoever the other one was,
Wijnaldum,
Genie, who's played every minute of every fucking game for what seems like the last 5 years. Now if you ask me, if you said to me, when is this midfield three going to play together, I'd be saying at the start of the season, I'd be saying League Cup, FA Cup, they won't be getting anywhere near it together at all.
But Genie does. Sorry, go on.
No, you're right.
Genie does a good job of holding it together and kind of leading that midfield. And I think with Curtis, for most of it, I didn't think he was that great on the ball, but then he leaves and we fall to shit. So he's obviously doing something. Like he's playing. he's playing into that collective midfield, isn't he? That together they are making something that, although it's not kind of what any of us want and it's not perfect, that they're making something work from it. And then when Curtis is gone, you suddenly go, oh, fucking hell, he was absolutely playing a key role in what we have there. But you're right. It's not. If you'd asked me when I would see those three players together, as you say, it's cup game at best.
But they do, and that's the point. They play really well. But the difference you're asking that team to do is that midfield plays at the best of its ability. Curtis Jones does really well in the game. Gini does really well in the game. Thiago, okay, he's the Farley, but he does all right. Do you know what I mean? But the difference is, in a normal scenario against a team who was second or third in the league, you would have players who were better, stronger, more physical, and they would not get out. And so if Liverpool played that way with that shape, the end result would be better because the players are stronger. And it boils down to this. If you look at the fucking side that finished the game and ask yourself, why is that side not as good as the side that finishes a fucking game against Leicester last season? It's because there's fucking nowhere near as good players.
Look
on
at the bench as well. Yeah. Leighton Clarkson is on the bench. He's 19 years old and he looks about 10. And, like, I don't know nothing about the lad. I don't find the time, unfortunately, to watch the youth team as I maybe should do. But he's on the bench, and he's on the bench with, you know, Reece Williams, with, you know, there's nothing that Phillips is on there as well. You know what I mean? There's nothing there. It's absolute bare bones of the squad. So, you know, destroying the manager for a performance where three quarters of it, we've all said over and over, was good enough to win it. Well, what's he meant to do? Because everyone is goosed, mentally and physically, clearly.
We'll get on to mentally in just in a quick second. Just dead quick on Reece Williams, I think it is worth pointing out, and I think it's something which, again, when we buy Davies and we buy Kabak, in his press conference afterwards, they talk to the manager about Nat Phillips and Reece Williams, and one of the things he says about Reece Williams is, it's really good now he's going to get to be able to go and play age group football. And within two fucking weeks, we need him to make up the numbers again on the bench. He's not playing age group football. He's get your boots, you're on the bus. Am I going to get on? Probably not, but you never fucking know these days, do you? And that is
And Ben Davis is injured, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you fucking out?
Yeah. I don't know what we're doing to them. Anyway, on the 10 minutes, Amelia, and I want to be really careful here, not least because there's been some stuff recently with the referees where there's been, you know, supposedly threats made and all of that sort of stuff. And I don't want to add to that, and I don't want us to add to that, and I don't think we ever really have. We work very hard not to talk about the referees. But for me, this whole thing, this whole mishmash of all of this is the rub. Which is part of the reason why the video assistant referee process exists, is because media outlets, obviously mainstream ones that have influence, not the Anfield rap, but all over the world, media outlets would focus on refereeing. And FIFA and UEFA and the FA and everyone wants to bring in the video assistant referee process. And that was part of, to try to give officials a bit of a hand. And one of the things that's driving me mad, and it's why it's really important that I keep using the language of video assistant referee process around it, is a reminder that it's not a fucking robot, it's another referee, it's another human being. And I, in that for 10 minutes, I've looked at that over and over and over again, and I can't still, and it's not, this is not bias, it's nothing like that, I cannot believe that's not being given as offside. I'm looking at it and looking at it, and all the way through the season, a lot of this, as it's happened to, is Robertson late penalty, the disallowed Henderson goal in the derby. There's loads of examples where it's been relatively late in games, and it just hasn't felt fair. And I know some people, Amelia, feel that all sounds a little bit namby-pamby, but part of the idea of this is it's meant to have a sense of natural justice around it, where you get to go, well, fuck it then, it was one of them because of X, Y, and Z. And for me, that's what's been hugely removed, and it's part of what leads in to my head absolutely going by the time that game's 2-1.
Fairness is the key thing, and I think that's the right word, because if it's fair, you can accept decisions that go in your favour, and you can accept decisions that go against you, because you can look at it and go, if you put those two decisions side by side, it's the same decision, the same rules were applied, they have the same outcome. And what I find really difficult about that onside goal is that I have watched Sadio Mane score goals this season that are more borderline than that are ruled offside because a fucking armpit is like, looks like it's in the exact same place. And that's what seems difficult, is that I feel like I have watched the same goal not be given. And yesterday, it is. And I think that's the hardest part, is that you don't mind the rules if you know that they're being applied the same way to everyone else, but it's the inherent sense of unfairness. And if it's not going to be fair, then let's just go back to it being one man's entirely subjective, or woman's, one person's entirely subjective perspective on it. And that's fine. And we accept that sometimes it's fair and sometimes it's not, because it's just one person making a decision. But the entire point of this is that it is meant to be fair, and it's meant to rule out that kind of, well, I don't know how they thought it was that, because from the angle I was looking at it, it wasn't. And I just think if it's not going to be fair, there's no fucking point in it, so just get rid of it.
It's nose to grindstone stuff with me, Ben, that offside, in that I genuinely have looked on the computer I'm currently recording this on, another computer and my phone, and literally put my nose up against it to try to see how on earth this is this. And I know that there's camera angles and that's a thing and all of that sort of stuff, but this is just the point, and this is why it is just, it sticks in your craw to such an extent, is you're left feeling really weirdly, because it's the thing that shouldn't happen. You're left feeling absolutely fucking robbed.
I think you hit the nail on the head. If it was a robot, and it was an automatic thing, like Hawkeye in tennis, the fucking ball's out, or we think it's going to go out, so it's out. Tough shit. That's it. And I think whether or not that decision is right, because I think, you know, it's easy to sound like a fucking, you're sat here like you're a loon and you think everything's going working. So it might be the case. We might be getting that off by a fucking cabal of referees raised by Alex Ferguson in a fucking, you know,
referee
for fucking 25 years.
I mean, that is possible, and we shouldn't rule it out, John.
We're not ruling that out. There's no evidence to suggest that that's not the case. But anyway, there might be evidence, but I haven't seen it. Anyway, I think because you've got a human being who, as far as I'm concerned as a Liverpool fan, and as far as every fan of every club is concerned, ex-referee doesn't like us. You know, that referee hates us. This referee hates us. Oh, we haven't got him. He's you know, you see it every week. You know, certain referees have certain issues with certain clubs. I think someone played the other week and they asked for that, not to have that referee again, because they always have trouble with him. Whether they believe that referee's inherently biased against them or not, whether he is or he isn't, I think the issue boils down to that you've still got a human being deciding the exact moment the ball has left the foot, and then deciding with some lines on a computer that, okay, well, that one's right that I've made. It's not that frame before, because look, it still might be touching his foot. It's this frame now where it's, so that just changes the whole thing. And I think ultimately, as long as there's a human involved in that process of pinpointing when them lines are drawn, then it's open to question. It's open to, well, hang on, you wouldn't have made that decision if it was Man United, or you wouldn't have made that decision if it was the other end of the pitch, or whatever it is.
Or you might not have made that decision if you hadn't just ruled out a penalty a second ago.
Exactly. And so because of that, whether it's fair or not, you've got this, it's shrouded in doubt. Do you know what I mean? It's shrouded in the, you know, you can sit here, we can reasonably sit here and say, these bastards, these decisions that are going against us, it's a conspiracy. We can reasonably say that, given the stuff that we've seen. Mane's offside against, you know, the offside against Everton, as opposed to that one. And I think that's always going to remain the case with VAR until it's either a robot. And, you know, frankly, the quicker the fucking robots are in charge of the world, the fucking better, by the way. But that's a separate matter. Until it's a robot, or it's crystal clear, then what's the point? Because you just, all you're doing is muddying the waters with another bell end who's making a fucking judgment. And sorry, just one more point in relation to the offside. For me, you know, I used to play centre half, and I was crap and I was dead slow, and offside was one of my big fucking things. But because that was the only weapon I had, and I couldn't do it, by the way, I was woeful. But an offside for me is a moral decision. It's got to be. As in, you know, let's say the referee's right. Firmino's foot is over there, by the way. He's not balanced. That foot can't impact this game. He's using it for balance. He's not using it to gain an advantage to defend. He's using it for balance. That cannot be a fair decision based on something that he can't impact the game on, being in line with someone else who can impact the game. You know, I always go back to the one when City got beaten in the Champions League by Tottenham, and Aguero was offside coming back from an offside position by about a millimetre or 5 millimetres. That is not a moral offside decision that should be given, because he's not gaining an advantage from coming backwards. He can't be. It's not like he stole one on the defender and the defender doesn't know he's there. He's literally next to him. He's just slightly behind. He's coming back in. So for me, an offside's got to be, have they gained an advantage from standing where they are? Yeah, they have. Sad, fucking offside. And that is why the offside rule used to fucking work, because a liner would look down the line and think, has he gained an advantage? Yes. And 9 times out of 10, he'd get it right. And do you know what? When he got it wrong, we'd go in the fucking booze and we'd say, that fucking linesman, he's fucking robbed us there. And so what? He got over it. And this now, just as you've hit the nail on the head, it doesn't feel fair. But I think the point to note is it can't feel fair because there's still a human judgment.
Yeah.
And
it's, so as long it's as pitched that, as definitive, isn't it? It's pitched as though the technology is giving you the answer, and it's not. You know, you've literally got, like there's 100x. There's 100x referees, like, absolutely laughing their heads off that they're getting a job on all kinds of media at the moment. And one of them's Peter Walton. And he literally goes yesterday on the commentary, you know, they can only work with the broadcaster's pitches. And I'm going, I know, mate. Because the technology is shite. It's not capturing the frame. The frame rate's not fast enough to capture when the ball is played. So he's making a judgment on offside.
There's a liner there in real time who's got his own view, who's gone offside. That's what he's done.
Yeah. And I just, like, accept, like, pitching it as definitive when it's not definitive is mad. Like, where's the margin for error? Like, I've talked about it before, but in the Dutch league, there's a big margin for error built in, and they just go, well, when it's that tight, we're just going to go with the linesman's decision. We're not going to fuck around pretending we know what we're doing with this frame rate, looking at a picture that might be wrong. We're just going to go with the linesman's original decision. Do that. Fucking do that. And then we're back to the situation that Jono's talked about, where you just go, all right, well, he's looked at it in real time and give it. You know, he's done his best, honestly. So we'll cop for it. But in this situation where they're taking time to look at pictures that might be wrong, drawing mad lines, ignoring a limb, by the way, that seems to fucking make it offside. Like, the other week, I don't even know what the fucking rules are anymore. I thought the other week that hands and arms and all this were classed as a playing part of your body.
Your arm up to a certain point, yeah.
Yeah, and there was an arm but in that fucking picture, wasn't
there?
Yeah,
and they drew the line from the other side of the arm to the side they drew the arm on when it was Van Dijk and Pickford, and you're like, this lad, you've got to get this.
What's going on with your extra sketch there?
Yeah, you've got to get this stuff right. No, but you've got to get this stuff right because people are seeing it live in real time, and it's back to this feeling of fairness.
But also, Neil, as well, in terms of, you can see them drawing the line, you can see the shitty, hazy, fucking pixelated picture they're trying to do it on. Let's hear the fucking conversation. Let's hear how they're concluding, they're reaching the conclusion they have done. Let's hear that conversation, because the broadcasters heard the conversation. Let us hear the conversation. And not, as you said before, rightly, not to throw the fellas under the bus, not so that we get dickheads throwing death threats around, but just so we understand, you know what I mean? Like, and maybe it makes that, like, are they guessing? Because if they're guessing, don't guess, boys. If you don't know, don't give it. Do you know what I mean? Don't do the John Moss situation that we had that time on the mic, where he just goes, I'm giving it. I'm just giving it. That's no good, lad. It's got to be based on something. And we want to hear that as footy fans, that it's based on something. And at the moment, we don't. We're not privy to those conversations, which makes it all feel even weirder than it already is.
What I find dead hard as well is that I can look at the same lines drawn on the fuzzy photo and I can go, that is categorically black and white, on or offside. And while being entirely convinced of that to the point where I'd like put my house on it, you then go, but it probably won't be when they decide. Do you know what I mean? That you're looking at it going, I categorically can tell you what that is, but I could not tell you what the ruling will be. And that's the difficulty with it, is that we've seen it go wrong or go against us or go in ways that we think justify any kind of sense or just sanity. You've seen that happen so many times that you can look at it, be convinced of what it is, and just go, but that probably won't be the outcome. And that's the hardest part of it, that you can't, when something goes to VAR, go, oh well, here we go, this, you know, reason will out, this is going to be, there'll be a sensible conclusion to this now because it's going to this process. If anything, it's the other way, and it's really, really fucking difficult, because other than the injuries, that's very much all we've got to talk about.
I think there's a guy on who ESPN, it's Dale someone.
Dale Johnson, yeah, he's great, and he's fucking he's doing the God's work.
He is, he's just putting a stint in, and he explains, week on week, he explains the VAR decisions. And one of the things he always comes back to is, oh, the way they draw the lines isn't necessarily what you see on the telly. You know, it doesn't necessarily, the way they draw them lines, yeah, well, they've drawn it, you know, and he explains it, and you think, why are they fucking showing us? Because I'm looking at them lines. I seen one the other week, United against Southampton, and it looked, on the telly and on the stills, it looked like they thought the United player's foot was a Southampton player's knee, and they drew the line from the wrong place, and I was like, we were all laughing. It cost one of my mate's uncles $6,000. He had like a bet on it, called the fucking Southampton not scoring, cost him $6,000. We were all going mad, like, look at this, this is how bad they are, oh my god, blah blah blah. And then like Dale does his email saying, oh, actually that was the right decision, because I've had the training, I've seen how they draw the lines, I can draw them myself, and you know, I've done it, and blah blah blah, and it was on, it was off, and so it was rightly. And I'm thinking, well, it fucking looks ridiculous, because it looks like that fella's knee is actually a yellow boot. So, and that's where it looks like they've made a basic error, and maybe they have and maybe they haven't, but because there's this mystique about this process, or what you're seeing isn't exactly what they're seeing, and then you get the contradiction of the divvy, you know, Peter Walton saying, well, they're struggling because they've only got the you know, the broadcasters' feeds, and you hear all this different things. If it works so well as you say it does, that's smashing. Show us how it works. Or don't show us how it works. Just say offside or fucking not. But this hybrid situation where they're looking and the line and the drawing and the this and the that and the other, and you still, the point of the makes is perfect, because you can look at it and go, well, I, that looks on, but I don't know what they're going to do, because they're looking at it for ages. So they might, I mean, this fella's just moving lines, he can do what he wants. And the other thing, I've seen a still the other week from the same fucking game. I think it was, the ball was about that wide. It was like a fucking egg. It was massive, because the way they paused it. It's almost like when you're trying to catch something on the telly, and you take a photo of it, and like the head's all over the place. It was like that. And you think, what's going on here?
It's also massive. It's the best league in the world, and you say it's a hybrid kind of process, and the best you can hope for when you don't know which way a decision's going to go is that a referee can run to the side of the pitch to look at a thick back telly that, like, do you know what I mean? To look at something that's like my nan's telly and look at one, like, just look at the same angle seven times, and then I've already pretty much made a decision, and then get another angle and he's already made his mind up, and you're going, for God's sake, it's the absolute worst, and it is a joke.
It's mad that they use a telly, like an Alba telly from Asda for it as well, isn't it? It's like, you know what I mean? Is that the
covered,
like,
with bin bags.
There's loads of dough floating around. Get a decent telly, you weirdos. I mean, on the referees and on the decisions in the match, by the way, okay, Alisson and Kabak, you know, do an absolute Laurel and Hardy moment. But Mane's absolutely launched by Johnny Evans. He pushes him so blatantly in the back, and then play just continues.
So
like, what,
I want to talk about this, Gareth. Part of the problem with this, and again, I want to really be careful, because in the past I've gone for this referee, and I stand by it in a sense, in that I think he's not good enough. I just don't think he's good enough. From the first time I've seen him referee, I don't think he's good enough. It's astonishing the scale of games he gets, which suggests that some people who assess this stuff genuinely do think he's good enough, and they're more qualified professionals than I am. But when it's difficult to talk about all of this and then absolutely slaughter the referee. Because one of the things that we end up, if you want to say get into VAR, then one of the things that somebody you might disagree is able to say is, say, well, then you just be back to the referees. At which point you'd say, well, I'd rather the referees were just wrong and we go from there. And that's true right up to the point at which Johnny Evans fucking judo throws Sadio Mane to the ground. And that ball prick goes, play on.
Yeah.
And that's why there becomes this sort of deep problem. Because I'm looking at it going, that is fucking wild. And I actually think there's a lot of people who are saying Liverpool lost their heads at 1-1. And I think there's something in that I want to come back to in a minute. But for me, they lose their heads at 2-1. Because at that point, you've been diddled by the VAR, you've been diddled by the referee, your fucking keeper, who's the best in the world, running to your new centre-half. And that's the point where heads go, Liverpool are fucking awful at 2-1. And that's what the manager says afterwards. But for me at 1-1, that is terrible refereeing. It is literally, so it's different to the video assistant referee process. That is just fucking shocking refereeing from someone who I have watched be a fucking shocking referee for many a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm genuinely livid. Like, every time I keep seeing, like, someone will just put a video of it up. You're right to be off social, because every now and again a video will just come on my timeline of Johnny Evans going, boom!
He does it right in front of him as well. And genuinely, like,
if you do that
in a McCoolies, you're getting kicked out of the McCoolies. Do you know what I mean? And that should be the absolute bar of just, like, you... It's flagrant and it's so obvious and it's right there and it
including Evans, including the, like, everyone stops for a minute and goes,
everyone on the pitch, everyone on the pitch bar the referee goes free kick.
I think it's one of the first things you get taught when you're a kid playing footy, defending, don't put your hands up.
Yeah,
it's one of the first tricks my half fella told me when I was playing. You're marking someone who's stronger than you, get your arms down low and push him with your forearm forwards. It's one of the first little tricks he gave me. Don't do that, it's dead easy to see. It's that as soon as you put your hands up, whether you push him in the back or not, whether he dives or not, every referee is always going to give it. And he's the first one who's gone, that's all right, that. It's fucking nuts. But I think I'm all right with referees being shit and Liverpool getting zero if there's no VAR. I'm fine with it. But I think the problem with referees, I think it boils down to the decision that Mike Dean makes. And I know he gets a load of death threats and it's, you know, obviously, you know, that's fucking wild and all that carry on that goes with it. But I think it's not him. I think the explanation, I heard Kelly Dalglish after the game said, one of the things that Mike Dean got told that they heard, which Robbo was saying before, we should hear it, was that when Suchek moved his arm and accidentally elbowed Mitrovic, he had a clenched fist. And so that changes Lee Mason's perspective of what he meant to do because his fist was clenched. Now, if you're going, I think they've got a very difficult job as referees. So either one of the two things has happened. They are so pickled that every decision is getting scrutinised to such an extent with VAR, even more so now, that they're looking at things that just aren't there. Or they've never played footy and so they don't fucking know. And I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. But the idea that Suchek meant to elbow him just because his fist was clenched was bananas to me. But I think what it tells you is it shows you a massive insight into how these fellas see the game. And is that because they're fundamentally shite and they've never really understood how the game works and they've never played it? Or B, are the decisions getting scrutinised to such an extent that they're petrified they're going to get one wrong?
They're trying to, I think at times in this, they are trying to fix what's a really hard and quite subjective thing with process. So what's happened is someone's written a guideline somewhere that says, if you see a bit of an elbow and there's a clenched fist in there, then X. And he's fallen back on that and gone, well, this, and I've got to assess this, and et cetera, et cetera. And I think there's times where trying to fix things that are subjective by building processes around them in all walks of life is actually a little bit dangerous. But within that, though, and this is what I fall back to, but he just fucking shoves him in the back and you don't give a free kick. And this is why it's difficult. You know, like, I'm trying to be sympathetic, and I genuinely am, and I'm trying to say it's a difficult job because I genuinely think it is. And I'm trying to remember all the times I've been a bell end to officials, which, by the way, are legion. And it's quite, you can write quite the catalogue of me being a bell end to officials throughout, you know, every single aspect. But he just pushes him in the fucking back, and you look at it and go, that's fine. But also, it's a player who, increasingly across the last few weeks and months, I've seen get fouled over and over, and he's not getting them.
Yeah, no one in the Premier League gets fouled more than Sadio Mane, and no one gets less of them given to them than Sadio Mane. And it's something that we should be having a conversation about because it's fucking not on. And Sadio just seems like, it's not that he's not noticing it and it's not that he's not shouting for them, but he is just being routinely ignored.
Yeah, he gets lashed to the deck a few weeks back in a game. He gets thrown to the deck. You've got lads with their arms around Mo Salah's neck week after week, not getting fucking given. And this is where it becomes, I want to stick up for yous, and I want to conclude, I'll get into the video assistant referee, I want to conclude that, but simultaneously I'm watching these fellas and I'm just going, this just isn't good enough, lads. It just isn't good enough, and if that's not a biased thing, he literally just pushes them over. You know, the other week, Southampton, the Jack Stevens had his arm wrapped around Mo Salah's neck, and the referee, yes, the ball goes dead, the referee doesn't even go and have a word and say, to be honest with you, we're broadly against strangulation. You might want to rein it in. What they do instead is go, nothing to see there, play on, and it's an act of fucking encouragement. What, I can get away with strangling this little fella? He's fucking great. Watch me go. And this is why it all becomes really difficult, and it's why they've had such hard lines. We've been going for a while here, and I do want to get onto Leipzig. But on it all, Gareth, why, you know, to do the field stuff and all of this, and why I think the Reds go at 2-1. I don't think they go at 1-1. I think the Reds go at 2-1. The manager rumours, they appear to be absolutely groundless, but he looks done in and he isn't alone. And I think it's been such a long stint, not just even from the start of last season with the pandemic thrown in, the really weird summer, but for us, for Liverpool, since the start of the 18-19 season when we realised we could win the league that year. And I think, like, genuinely thinking about me personally, thinking about the people we speak to around the Anfield Wrap, thinking about what you've seen from the football club, like, seasons are meant to have breaks and stops and starts, and I don't really feel as though psychologically as a club, 18-19 really ended and 19-20 really began. You know, we all went berserk when City dropped points second game against Tottenham like it was fucking April and it was August. And I think there's something here where we look so done in now. And I'm concerned about it. Like, I don't know what resets it. I think we all look so done in. We all sound so done in. The people on this show are a bit done in. The general sort of vibe is done in. And I'm not quite sure what you do about it, because it just feels like it's, as I say, I can make an argument that, you know, you go back to November 2018 is when the intensity of all this has started. And it just feels like such a fucking slog. And there hasn't been a proper break for anyone. And now the manager, the poor fella's had to live through all this. But there'll be the players there who've been living through all sorts as well. And it is just feeling like it's so on top.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, life's shit. Like let's not sugarcoat it. It's absolutely crap. Living through a pandemic for everyone, no matter how much money you've got in the bank or how big your house is. And it's crap for them. All the stuff you can do with that money ordinarily, they can't do. You know, they're just, it's game after game after game. They no doubt have to follow a million and one rules. Like, I remember in the first pandemic, they were talking about, they don't go shopping or anything like that. You know, all the stuff's delivered to them, to make sure they don't pick up COVID via any other way and things like that. So, you know, they're basically prisoners in their own home, like a lot of them are. A lot of us are. And, you know, it's nice that they get to go to training, I'm sure, and have that break and see each other and work with each other. But even in training, half of them are missing. And, you know, they're missing, like, you have people, don't you, that you bounce off, that you enjoy working with. You know, we all have that. And Virgil is obviously one that's massive for all of them. Like, you can just tell. And look, you know, I was fortunate enough to interview him, his boss. Like, you're just in the same room as him, and you're just looking at him going, you're great, you mate. I wish you were my mate. Do you know what I mean? And he's not there. So, like, a sort of cultural leader as well as a brilliant player is not there. And it must be really hard for, like, Henderson and Milner to continually be, like, the people that have to try and pick everyone else up. And then, you know, Klopp's not himself because of what's going on. Klopp's not himself because of what's happening on the pitch. Even, like, you know, I mean, Linders is another one who just seems a boss fella to be around, but, you know, they all must be struggling. And like you say, it's sort of like, where does this end? Like, if you could just say to them all, just go and have a couple of weeks off, boys, do you know what I mean? Fuck it. But you can't, because there's a game on Tuesday and a game on Saturday.
And also, they couldn't fucking go out their houses. I mean, you're off next week. I was off last week. I sat my house and read books.
That's the thing. It's like, sort of, you know, all the stuff that people are saying and suggesting when they look at Liverpool. Liverpool will have thought of it. Like, oh yeah, just give the manager a break and put Pep in charge. They will have thought of it. They will have talked about it. Klopp can't go anywhere. Klopp can't go to Germany, as we know. And what's he going to do? Just sit in his house and feel sorry for himself? He probably doesn't want to do that. I don't know. I'm not him. But I'm reading between the lines. So it is incredibly hard. And I think, what, you know, from our perspective as fans as well, you know, we're all bonkers about footy anyway, aren't we? We're all a bit mad about it. We all, you know, yous have done shows on it, talked about how mad we are about the game we love and all that. But even more so during these times, it's like, it's the only bit of light. And then someone's fucking smashed the light and there's no more bulbs available. And it's like, fuck me. Like, I haven't got anything here. Do you know what I mean? Like, the bit of me weak that I was into, the bit of me weak that was the escape from the shite, that shit is that. And it's like, fucking hell. And yeah, I don't know where it ends, and I don't know how they do the mental reset. I mean, when you were just saying there about sort of, you know, what they've missed out on, the normal pre-season, the normal summer,
Even stuff like, you know, the stuff, and we enjoy it as well, of course, you know, getting to go to like America or Australia or somewhere and it's boss and like people absolutely love Liverpool and they're made up you there and all that. That must be brilliant for them. You know, we always have the conversation about it's a bit mad that they go that far and jet lag and it's not ideal and blah, blah, blah. But it must be amazing as well on the other hand to see all these people in a nice, lovely, hot place going, your boss, your boss, your boss. And they haven't seen anyone. They've just been turning up to empty grounds week by week, getting shitty VAR decisions. Everyone's fucking injured. The boss is having a terrible time. There's no fans in the ground. There was for a little bit and then they took them away again. And it's like, you know, there's a performance psychology, like it's a thing. Like if you're a performer, you want a fucking audience to perform in front of. And they haven't got it. And like someone like, are you telling me Bobby? Have you seen Bobby's teeth? Have you seen the way he dresses? Have you seen everything about the man? He is a performer. And so if his performances, as an example, drop off because there's no crowd, then that's psychology, that's life. Like he can't just go to himself, oh, I'll just pretend there's a crowd there. Because you'll look a dickhead, because you can't go and scream at a seat. But you can't go and scream at a fan.
But you can pick up the corner flag and play it like a fucking guitar, can't you?
Oh, what a ballad. Yeah.
Honestly, for that alone, 10-game ban.
Without fucking about, I'm pretty sure it's a yellow card and he didn't fucking get one at Czech before. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's a yellow card, genuinely. And he didn't get one because, you know, you can look at the fella in the middle. Amelia, I think the, you know, just to sort of sum it up, begin to look forward to Leipzig to an extent. But a lot of people are done in right now, and I'd love to do a bit of it. It'll be sound in a week or two, but that could just prove bollocks. Everyone's done in for the reason that go way beyond football, for one thing. Like, everyone's got a bit of a wound that's bleeding. But for Liverpool supporters, and frankly this team at the moment, football's using sandpaper to clean the blood.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to get bleaker then, but that was the end of it.
And then a seagull shits on your head.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the difficulty, as you say, is that we can't look forward to the next game. We can't go, you know, put that behind us, on to the next one. You know, you can't do that because you've got a team of injured men limping on to the next one. You've got mental fatigue abounds and you just... It's just really fucking difficult. And I think it would be nice, as Robbo said, it's normally the thing, or it is traditionally the thing, where we've all been able to go, well, life shit, but we get to watch Liverpool be boss for 90 minutes every single week, or two times a week. And I think that although it's shit to kind of feel like the league's not happening this season, you'd kind of get to go, but we really enjoyed when we won the European Cup, didn't we? So we could enjoy that again. But the difficulty is that you're looking forward to it and going, but I don't know how, with that many people injured and with things as difficult as they are, you can't really look forward to a bit of light in that either. And that's the difficulty.
That's going to be the trick for them, Jono, in that in other seasons you get to go, right, okay, we're getting diddled here in England. Sound. Okay, let's reset. Got a big away in Germany to come and let's just focus in on that and put our brains in on that. It's different competition, different, feels like the video referee is less involved. I might regret saying that. But even with this, like, we're not playing Leipzig and Leipzig, we're playing them in fucking Budapest. There's every chance the return fixture won't take place at Anfield. At some point there'll be an away goals diddle in amongst this where both legs are played in neutral venues. When we kick the first leg off, we don't know about the second, by the way, on an away goals diddle. It might be at Anfield, it might not. Is there an advantage or isn't there an empty stadium? That's also a question. It's fucking berserk, frankly. Like, it's not... I'm trying to clear my head here and I'm failing miserably. You know, if Amelia Bonner wants me to get bleaker, then, you know, she's just going to hang on after this call finishes because we can really go into some deep places. there was a point yesterday where on me messages, the last thing that Jono would message me was, it's a Ben Johnson, and underneath it said, struggling here. Because his last message was trying to get on a call and he was struggling, but it just had underneath all... Every time I put my phone on and looked at that app, it was Ben Johnson struggling here. I was like, fucking right he is. there is Ben. You know, they've got to find a way, basically, to hang in Europe for as long as they possibly can. And I do feel like normally in these things I'd say, hey, pick me a team. But it's a bit like going, well, who's fucking fit? But if they could just score, not in Germany, in Budapest, if they could just score, get a score draw over in Budapest and then get them back, possibly to Anfield, if not also in Budapest, then you never know, and we could make the last eight of the Champions League, and by then, a few more might be back and they might be in better nick.
I think the one trick left that Liverpool have got, the one thing they've got, is to be able to say, look, let's reset. It's a different what you just said, it's a different competition, blah blah blah. They get the novelty, and to be fair, it's a fucking novelty these days of literally getting on a plane. They haven't done it for fucking ages. They used to do it every week. They get that novelty of going away as a group on a plane, something different. Jesus Christ, you offered me a flight, just a loop around Liverpool now, I'd be fucking made up. If you could get me a gin and tonic on it, on an easy jet, I'd be fucking ecstatic. But they get that novelty, and it's, you know, you've just got to hope by hook or by crook they can get a result, whatever result, a win. It's not beyond the realms. You know, Liverpool can play perfectly. You know, you've seen Leipzig be great. You've also seen them get whacked against United. 5-0, I think.
It was 5-0 at Old Trafford.
Yeah, so they'll have a plan. They'll be looking at Liverpool. I think there's something in the fact. I don't think Klopp overly likes Nagelsmann, whatever his fucking name. I think he fucking can't stand them, by the way. Based on absolutely nothing, except I can't stand them, and me and Jürgen are very similar. So, but I don't know. I just think they'll be geared up. So if they can find the results, and then I think the one game all season whereby you can guarantee that Liverpool will come out the fucking blocks is Everton at home, because I think what they'll be saying to them is, these fuckers have ruined your season, make them fucking suffer. That'll be the message over and over and over and over. It's not an easy game, but if you can just find a way for a diddle these next two games, then you know the world looks a little bit bright. It's meant to be sunny next week as well. Fuck me. Imagine a win on Tuesday, beating Everton in the derby, and then springs. We're skipping down the garden with your top off your head.
I for one, appreciate the leadership of our new Arctic overlords. Gareth, just on it, last little thing on the Leipzig game as we look to build it. For me, it's one where Liverpool, it's important Liverpool attack and it's important Liverpool score. It's important they focus on what they can do well against Leipzig, is my point. We've said before about the front three. Could they have been better around the box against Leicester? Almost certainly. There's been a couple of goals that Salah's missed, but he's got that great one now set up by Firmino. I just want to see Liverpool play their football against Leipzig and find a way to pin them back and find a way to hurt them. Because I think if they do that, they can progress.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to write something about this yesterday on our Facebook page. I managed to put something up. I don't even know what it says now. I just put something up and then turned my computer off.
I think my review ends with me trying to get into a fixture. Like, I'd love to be lashed out to McCooley's for pushing someone like Johnny Evans. I'd fucking give anything for
that
right
money.
Now.
I'd pay good money.
Yeah.
Same. But yeah, I mean, I was trying to sort of, in the thing I wrote, I was trying to say, well, you know, what is it they do now? You know what I mean? Like, you lash cups at the wall, do you have a fight with each other, do you know, they've got to find something from somewhere. And I kind of think, like, they were doing that yesterday, you know what I mean? Like, for three quarters of the match, they were doing it. Like, you couldn't question their attitude, and, you know, the plan goes out the window, obviously, when Milner goes off on 17 minutes and you put a knackered lad back on the pitch. But it's there's not loads they can change, obviously. There's not loads of, you know, players that are going to be available that are, you know, like that were missing on Saturday, they're probably going to be missing for this. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of this constant go again, go again, go again. But it's in them, and it's 100% in them. And the weird thing that sounds mad when we're on the run that we're on, you know, we're churning out bottom six form, but we're not playing like a bottom six team. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's patches in every single game where you're like, go ahead, that's Liverpool. Yeah, that's it. Do you know what I mean? And that's gone all the way back to, like, Old Trafford in the FA Cup. Like, it's just a continual pisser the way it goes, and things keep happening, and it's just like, fuck off! Because it feels so close. You know what I mean? And obviously we had the Tottenham and the West Ham games in there, and they're getting lost now because there's so many fucking defeats. But yeah, They just got to knuckle down, haven't they, and go again. No one can say or do anything else. They just got to dig in and just back themselves that it's gonna come. You know what I mean? And Mo's a match winner. Firmino's a match winner. You know, there was loads of talk about Mane, I thought, yesterday that I saw, and like, I get that there's frustration that we're not seeing the absolute, you know, best version of Sadio. But again, I don't feel like he's not putting it in. he's having a go. He looks like the fella I know and love. Do you know what I mean? He's knuckling down. He's trying to play himself out of it. He's not like, you know, like his shoulders and his head aren't gone.
No, I thought he was fine. Yeah.
So, look, someone I'm open, like, you know, based on fuck all, to be honest with you, I haven't got anything for you, but I'm just hoping everything goes right one day and we thrash someone, and maybe it'll be Leipzig. I fucking hope so. Please.
I fucking hope so, please, should be the title of the show. It probably won't be. The marketing lads want something that flies and does well on SEO, but I fucking hope so, please. Thank you very much, Gareth Roberts, Amelia Bonner, Ben Johnson. It's been the Anfield Wrap, and I just fucking hope so, please. Sports Social Podcast Network.